This is KD0CDQ, Mike here. This is the outreach of the South Cars organization. We will be doing the technician classes tonight. So in a moment, I will start by reading the preamble. Over. Welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This event will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu each Tuesday, and at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. Letting it drop. For those who are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS server at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614 or All-Star node 27404. That's 27404. For those who are interested in obtaining a license for the first time, please contact Mike, KD0, CDQ via email at VOIP at SCARS VOIP, which is SCARSVOIP.com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connected to the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the AARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at voip@southcars.com. Letting it drop. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at voip@scarsvoip.com. This section this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.scarsvoip.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Over. Didn't hear anybody, so at this point, let us begin. We're going to start with W4RFJ. The chief will have the first question. Take it away, chief, in Pennsylvania. Over.
KB0CDQ, this is W4RFJ for South Cars. Outstanding. First of all, let me make sure I'm making it into the system okay. Are you hearing me okay there, Mike?
Got you loud and clear. Way out here in Kansas, and I got the windows closed. Over.
Well, you've never heard my wake-up call. Okay, well, good evening, everybody. This is W4RFJ. I'll be starting off with question T as in Tango, 5, B as in Bravo, 01. How many milliamperes is 1.5 amperes? Well, the answer to that question is 1,500 milliamperes. And I'll tell you, it's kind of confusing, but I can tell you that the number needs to go up because we're breaking it down to ten to the minus 3 power when we're converting to milliamperes. So what that tells me is I need to move my decimal point 3 places to the right to get the correct answer. Now, if you move it 3 places to the left, you'll notice none of those answers that are listed actually work. However, if you move it 3 places to the right, you get 1,500 milliamperes. And I can tell you, if I was converting from milliamperes back to amperes, you would actually go to the left with your decimal point, which would make it 1.5. Are there any questions, any comments, any suggestions, changes, and or deletions? Please call W4RFJ.
NO70, good evening. Chief comment.
Go ahead, George. George, have you a comment that's NO70?
I should have a comment, Mike, and the call is NO70 to make sure I don't get a SEC letter. So, Chief, so what you're also saying then is that, are you saying that there are 1,000 milliamperes in 1 ampere? So that if there are 1,000 milliamperes in 1 ampere, that would mean that there would be 2,000 milliamperes in 2 amperes. So 1,500 would have to be in between, which gives you 1,500 milliamperes and 1.5 amperes. So are you saying it's like 1,000 milliamperes per ampere? Is that right? Over.
Well, I can't argue with fact. Yes, sir.
Thank you for the clarification. Back to whoever's next, 1070.
Yes, Chief, I believe you're up with the next question. Go ahead.
Also, are you okay with me taking that?
Yes, Chief, go ahead. I think you've got two in a row there. It's your turn on the next question. Over.
Okay, the next question, Tango, T as in Tango, 5, B as in Bravo, 1-0. What is the approximate amount of change measured in decibels of a power decrease from 12 watts to 3 watts? Okay, now this is a pretty easy thing to figure out once you understand some slight rules or guides. I can tell you that when you increase power so many decibels, you're actually 3 decibels would be doubling. Okay, so if I had six decibels of gain and I had 1 watt going in, I would double it twice, right? Because you got 3 dB plus 3 dB equals.
Chief, I think you were cut off there. You want to repeat what you just said? Over. I think we're having an operating difficulty there. So, George, if you wouldn't mind picking up your next question, and we'll give the Chief a chance to come back when he's ready. It's KD0CDQ. Over to you, NO70.
KD0CDQ and the South Bars Technician class, Tuesday evening edition, August 21st, 2018. This is George, NO70, and thank you. Appreciate that, Michael. We'll come back to Chief in just a moment. Chief and I are sharing the responsibility tonight, and I do want to recognize the presence of all of our students tonight, either tonight or via podcast or via other means, and I want to acknowledge and appreciate your investment in your education and hopefully your future hobby, whether you do all the way with this to the license or not. We hope that you will, but you certainly will learn something here that will help you in your professional life, whatever that might be as well. So you're doing a good thing for yourself tonight. Let me reset the connection. All right, so let me also remind the class tonight that as we go through the questions and answers tonight, that the A, B, C, and D that we use tonight may not and probably will not be the same A, B, C, and D on the actual test. And even from one test to another, at the same location, at the same place, in the same month, or over time, the answers of A, B, C, and D will change. However, the actual answer itself will not change. So we'll be that's what we're looking at tonight, are also the actual answers. Are there any questions on that before I proceed with my question? Please call in 070. Over. All right, nothing heard. So, well, I see Chief is back. So before I go into my question, so we keep the questions in order, Chief, you were covering question T5. B10 Tango 5 Baker 10. And we lost you on that connection. Let me let you finish your thoughts on that question, and then I will pick it up back with mine after you've finished your explanation on that one. W4RFJ, let's see how you're doing. NO70, over.
Okay, sorry about that, George. For some reason, my phone just reset, just right out of the blue. So I don't know what's going on. So if I drop out, I'm not even going to try to get back in. But I will continue with my explanation. The answer to that question, by the way, before I get hung up on again, is 12 watts with attenuation to 3 watts. That means it was attenuated 3 dB twice. The reason why I know that is because when you attenuate a signal by 3 dB, you cut it in half. So if I cut 12 watts in half twice, that would be minus, showing a decrease, 6 dB. The answer to that question is minus 6 dB. So first of all, an increase in power is a positive number. A decrease in power is a negative number. Every 3 dB, you either double or half, depending on which direction you're going. Every 10 dB, it's your power in a positive direction is times 10. In a negative direction, it is divided by 10. So just to give you an example, if I had 10 watts out with 10 dB minus 10 dB of gain, my actual output power would be 1. Okay? And going the opposite direction, if I had 10 watts with 10 dB of gain, my power out would be 100 watts. So those are the two guides that I use, and you can find most of these questions are going to be around the 3 dB slash 10 dB changes. So has anybody got any questions concerning decibels? I tried to keep it as simple as I could, and I am kind of shooting from the hip here. I don't think my phone died, so any questions, please call W4RFJ. Okay, hearing none, I apologize for the hiccup. George, go ahead, W4RFJ.
W4FJ in the South Course Technician class, NO70. And again, want to acknowledge, I think there might even be some people through a video conferencing service tonight. Want to make sure I acknowledge their presence as well if they happen to be here tonight. And Chief and I are sharing this, so we're alternating questions. And would like to remind you that the next class will be this coming Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the one after that, Tuesday, 1 week from tonight at 7 p.m., you can check the schedule on the scarsvoip.com website. All right, my question next is T5D12, Tango 5, Bravo 12. And the question is, which of the following frequencies is equal to 28,400 kilohertz? And you're given four options. Of 28.4 megahertz, 2.8 megahertz, 284 megahertz, or 28.4 kilohertz. All right. So we want to remember two things to keep in mind long term. A kilo means a thousand. You might have heard kilowatts, kilograms. Those are like 1,000 watts or 1,000 grams. A mega means a million. So if you think about it, we know that there are 1,000 kilos in a million. So you are looking then at the 28,400 kilohertz to be converted to a megahertz. If you divide the kilohertz by the 1,000 that would fit into a megahertz, 28,400 kilohertz divided by 1,000 is equal to 28.4. So 28,400 kilohertz is equal to 28.4 megahertz. Now, we're looking at a lot of calculations tonight, and with radio and communications to make sure that you're operating your equipment safely and within the legal limits, you do have to have some knowledge of basic calculations, because physics and so forth, which electronics and radio are based on a lot of calculations. So just hang in there. The enjoyment of the hobby far exceeds the pain of the calculations. Let me repeat that. The joy of the hobby and of the knowledge that you are gaining far exceeds the pain of the arithmetic or algebraic calculations. So you're doing a good thing for yourself. Keep up the good work to all of our students. All right, that was question Tango 5B12. And Chief is up with the next question, W4FJ.
Okay, let me make sure I've got the right one here. I've got shown on my list, T is in Tango 5, C is in Charlie 01. What is the ability to store energy in an electrostatic field called? It is called a capacitor. And the reason why it's called a capacitor is because a capacitor, or capacitance, and a capacitor that has capacitance is basically two plates separated by an insulator. Those two plates hold an electrostatic or an electric field. So it's called capacitance. The size of the plates and the thickness and material used as the insulator is what determines the capacitance of a capacitor. Any questions, discussion, changes, deletions, please call W4RF. Okay, hearing none, this is W4RFJ, and I've got the next one, I believe. Michael, are you good for any announcements or anything else? I just want to double check and make sure I'm not going too fast.
You're doing just fine, Chief. Everything's going fine. Very smooth. There's no background noise. Everything's good. KD0CDQ, back to you. W4RFJ, did you get my transmission? This is KD0CDQ. You're up. Over.
Yes, sir. I was waiting for you to unkey. All right. Let me go ahead with it then. Next question, ladies and gentlemen, is T is in Tango, 5, C is in Charlie, 03. What is the ability to store energy in a magnetic field called? Well, that is inductance. Inductance is the ability to store energy in a magnetic field. We use that in a coil. The reason being, and I don't want to get too deeply into this, but when you have current flowing through a wire, it generates a magnetic field. As you coil up your inductor, that magnetic field adds to the next magnetic field and creates a larger magnetic field. And, well, I can tell you that if you turn on DC to a coil, turn it off, turn it back on again, that magnetic field will build and build and build. And it has the capability of building a voltage that could actually destroy components. So one area you might see that is when you're driving a relay. We use a diode to protect that kickback that can result from energizing a coil multiple times. It actually gives a path for the current to flow so that inductive field can break down. Anyway, the answer to the question is inductance. It's the ability to store energy in a magnetic field, and the component is a coil. So if there's any questions, changes, deletions, modifications, and or just a greeting or hello, please call W4RFJ. Okay, hearing nothing, I'm assuming that the ladies and gentlemen that are coming in via non-amateur radio means are steadily listening and drilling Gordon with questions. At least I hope so. Anyway, the next person on George, it's up to you now. You've got a couple of them in a row here, so have at it, sir. N-O-7-O, this is W-4-R-F-J.
Well, thank you, Chief. W-4-R-F-J, I'm the technician class, the South Cars 2018, August, N-O-7-O. Let me request permission there. You're right. I have been assigned three questions in a row here. So in the spirit of good ham radio operation and collaboration, Michael, KD0CDQ, request your permission to continue with three questions in a row and asking for questions in between and just drill through these. Is that okay with you, Michael? KD0CDQ, N-O-7-O.
N-O-7-O, go right ahead with your next three questions. We're all waiting with bated breath. KD0CDQ.
Well, thank you, Michael. Well, I'm probably going to be out of breath by the time this is over with. All right. Well, students, let me say my question, next one is Tango 5C10, T5C10. Now, that T5 of C prefix that is on the question means that we're looking at the set of FCC questions that has the heading, paragraph heading, of electronic principles, capacitance and inductance, and current flow in circuits, alternating current, and definition of RF and polarity, which Chief just covered, and also DC power calculations and impedance. So when we're dealing with T5C questions, that's what we're doing. The next question is T5C10. How much power is being used in a circuit when the applied voltage is 12 volts DC and the current is 2.5 amperes? So we have volts and amperes. So they are going to be in the same units. And by definition in algebra and by convention, power is specified as voltage times current. Current, or in algebraic terms, P equals E times I, E standing for voltage, I standing for current. Let me reset so I don't time out again. So to find how much power is being used in a circuit with a voltage of 12 volts and current of 2.5, we multiply those two values together, and 12 times 2.5 is 30 watts. Now note that if amperes is given in milliamperes, and remember how we talked about milliamperes and then we all talked about kilos and megas. Well, if the amperes is given in milliamperes, you will need to convert milliamperes to amperes, okay? And then use the P equals E times I formula. It is important that you also become familiar with the formula for power when current and resistance are given, which might mean then the formula of P equals E squared over R. Now we have available on the website a little Ohm's law and power calculation wheel, which is available for you to look at, and the use of it is described there. Let me reset. So power is equal to voltage times current. How much power is being used in a circuit with 12 volts and current 2.5? 12 times 2.5, so you would double the 12 to be 24. Take half of the 12, which would be another 6, and that gives you 30 watts. That's another quick way to estimate it when you're under the pressure of the exam. Are there any questions or comments on question T5C10? Please call N070 now. Over. All right, nothing heard. The next question is T5 Charlie 12, T5C12, in that same T5C category. The question is, what is impedance? There are possible four answers given are a measure of the opposition to AC current flow in a circuit. Answer B that they're giving is the inverse of resistance, C, the Q or quality factor of a component, or D, the power handling capability of a component. Impedance is a measure of the opposition to AC current flow in a circuit. Chief was just talking about how the inductance and everything can be set up in the case of a coil. So impedance is a little bit different than inductance, although it's in the same category. Impedance is a measure of the opposition to AC current flow in a circuit. Let me reset. Let me try to make this a little bit easier to understand. Have you ever tried to pedal a bicycle that is attached to a generator to provide, say, you know, green current? Remember how hard you had to pedal? That is because there is an opposition to overcome as the magnetic field is established in the coils that are used to generate the electrical energy. In an electronic circuit, the measure of opposition to the alternating current flow is called the impedance, as the coils impede or oppose your effort to establish the magnetic field and make current flow. All right, so impedance is a measure of the opposition to AC current flow in a circuit. Are there any questions on T5C12 before I go to the third of this particular set of questions and then turn it back over to Chief? Any questions on T5C12? Over. All right, no questions heard. We're now going to go to section T5D as in Delta of the FCC questions. T5D as in Delta deals with Ohm's law, formulas and usage, components and series and parallel. So, yeah, there's some more math here, but we'll try to keep it real simple for you as well. In Ohm's law, we're going to look now at question T5D04. What is the resistance of a circuit in which a current of 3 amperes flows through a resistor connected to 90 volts? All right. So using algebra or that Ohm's law triangle that's available to you on the website, resistance is equal to voltage divided by current. So we are given the fact that we have a voltage of 90 volts in the question, and we have a current of 3 amperes. So 90 divided by 3 equals 30, and that means the answer is 30 ohms. This gets to the basis of Ohm's law. You do want to study up on Ohm's law, and this is something that will help you if you try to build your own house and want to look at power consumption, or if you do electronic circuits, or if you have to take your car in for repairs and you need to understand why they're charging you so much money for repairs on your electrical system. It's kind of good to know what these things are so that you can take care of yourself and your radio equipment and other property. Ohm's law is very, very helpful. All right, with that, I'm at the end of my three questions. Let me see if there are any questions regarding T5D04, and then we'll go back to Chief. Any questions on T5D04? Please call now. Nothing heard? Well, it's a pleasure to let you hear another voice for a while here now. KD0CDQ, how's everything going? And I'll let you then invite Chief back in. KD0CDQ, NL70, over.
W4RFJ, this is KD0CDQ. It's your turn. Your turn on the question pool. Over.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. This is W4RFJ with the technician study. Next question I have is T is in Tango, 5, D is in Delta, 1-3. What happens to current at the junction of two components in series? Well, it is unchanged. And the reason why it's unchanged is because in a series circuit, resistance divides, current is equal through all components. Or there's two separate resistances, but the total current, which is the total resistance into the total voltage, gives you total current. I hope I didn't mess that up. it is unchanged because current is equal throughout a series circuit. Any questions on that that answer, that question, please call W4RF. Okay, hearing none, this is W4RFJ. I hope I didn't blow that one. Go ahead, George, you're next on the pool.
Thank you, Chief. All right, my question is Tango 5D14. And I'm going to ask Chief's question, but I'm going to ask it about a parallel circuit instead of a series circuit. Now, the thought occurs to me that it might be good to help these students understand the difference between series and parallel. So, students, if you have a piece of paper and pen, or a pen or pencil ready, I want you to draw two rectangles left to right across the page and put a line between them. So you got a rectangle on the left, a rectangle on the right, and a line joining them in the middle. And everything that goes in one side comes out the other, and that's in series. Now, next, lower on the page, I want you to draw two rectangles vertically up and down on the page, and then have them drawn in parallel where you can either walk through one of the rectangles or the other, either way, without going through both of them, and that is a parallel circuit. I'll come back to that in a little more in just a moment. Let me reset. All right, so my question is, what happens to current at the junction of two components in parallel? Now, Chief asked about it in series. I'm asking about it in parallel. Current at the junction of two components in parallel, the one that's the lower one down on the piece of paper you just drew on, divides between them, the current divides between them dependent on the value of the components. Okay? The current can go through one or the other. Remember our discussion earlier tonight or earlier last week about a lake and two rivers. If we have a lake that's 3,000 feet deep and we have rivers coming off of the same side of the lake, then where the rivers are different sizes, we learn that the pressure of the 3,000 feet of water is the same at the head of the river, but the amount of water flowing through each of the rivers, one being smaller than the other, is going to be different. Therefore, the current in the rivers is different. Therefore, the current in the electronic parallel circuit will be different. The pressure will be the same from the lake. It's 3,000 feet deep. But because of the different size of the rivers, or different resistances, the amount of current in the rivers would be different. So the current at the junction of two components in parallel divides between them dependent upon the value of the components or how much resistance that there is in the parallel circuit. All right, are there any questions about the calculation there? Please call 970. All right, nothing heard, and let's see, Michael, request your permission to proceed with my next assigned question of Tango 6A02. May I have your permission to proceed with that? KD0CDQ, 0070, over.
Go right ahead with your next question, George. You've got it.
All right, thank you. And again, I appreciate all of our technician class people who are putting forth the hard work they are tonight. We're moving now on to FCC sub-element T6, electrical components, circuit diagrams, and component functions. And in this case, we're looking at electrical components, fixed and variable resistors, capacitors, inductors, fuses, switches, and batteries. My assigned question now is Tango 6A Alpha 02, T6A02. What type of component is often used as an adjustable volume control? Let me repeat that since I stuttered. What type of component is often used as an adjustable volume control? And our possible answers are fixed resistor, power resistor, potentiometer, or transformer. Let me reset. All right, we have learned, class, that voltage is also known as the potential in a circuit, referring to the potential energy that could flow through the circuit. An adjustable volume control, which is what the question is asking about, must be able to be adjusted to a desired voltage, affecting therefore the current and thereby loudness through the volume control. The adjustable volume control changes the potential in an audio circuit and is therefore called a potentiometer. Let me reset. The other three answers that were given have a fixed value and are not adjustable. The fixed resistor is fixed. It cannot be adjustable. A power resistor usually has a fixed value, and a transformer, once built, the number of turns in the coil and the voltage is the same. A potentiometer can be adjusted. Therefore, the only answer to the question that is adjustable is the potentiometer. So the answer to what type of component is often used as an adjustable volume control is a potentiometer. That's the logic behind that question. Any questions, please call in 07 at Liver.
W4RFJ.
Thank you, Chief. W4RFJ in 070.
Okay, George. Yeah, I want to make sure that everybody understands that the potentiometer, which is also known as a variable resistor, has three contacts, both ends of the resistor and then the wiper. The wiper is where the variation happens. And it's used in a lot more than just audio circuits. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that a potentiometer is used in some circuits to calibrate and or set a specific voltage level, adjust the bias of a transistor. There's all kinds of things that the variable resistor, which is industry known as a potentiometer, is used for a lot of different things. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Hope that was of some help, George. Go.
Well, thank you, Steve. That's a very good point, that the questions can sometimes be reworded for other purposes. This question asked about an adjustable volume control, but it, as Chief just mentioned, a variable resistor or potentiometer might be used to adjust, for example, the grid voltage on an old vacuum tube, or if you get a semiconductor, you know, you can have other parts of the semiconductor adjusted, and we'll be looking at semiconductors later in the course. So thank you, Chief. That's a very good point. You can learn from one question and apply it to all the others that are possible when you go to take the test class. Well, Chief and I were given an equal number of questions. I used up mine, and I think Chief has one left, too. Is that right? KD0CDQ and 070, over to you.
That is correct. In 070, one more question from W4RFJ. Chief, take it away with your final question. Over.
Well, here I am, showing up on the caboose again. Okay, very good. Thank you very much, gentlemen. The last but not least question that I have is T as in Tango, 6, A as in Alpha, 09. What electrical component is used to protect other circuit components from current overloads? Well, I'm gonna tell you, pardon me, the capacitor isn't going to do it, an inductor isn't going to do it, so that leaves the last answer, all of these choices are correct, is wrong. The answer is a fuse. A fuse actually burns open with too much current flowing through it. Sometimes you can see a fuse where it starts to bend, or if, especially if it's clear, you can see it starting to bend. It's getting close to its, it's getting close to popping, but just not enough current to make it pop. So, anyway, and I probably shouldn't use pop. I should say burn up. There you go. So we have other types of components that also are used. Circuit breakers, which there's a plethora of different circuit breakers, but fuses, they are pretty much standard nowadays. So the fuse is the answer. Has anybody got any questions, changes, deletions, comments? Any feedback at all? W4RP.
NO70 with a question, and I really don't know the answer to this question, over.
Go for it.
Thank you, Chief. Are fuses reusable, and are circuit breakers reusable after they have popped from an overload? Over.
Well, that's a good question, because I have seen resettable fuses, believe it or not. But we won't go there. Most of the standard fuses usually cannot be reused. Circuit breakers are designed so that you can reset them. I don't know if anybody's been around long enough to know about the old fuse buttons they used to screw into a fuse panel. Those you could not reset. You had to replace them. So circuit breakers are resettable. Does that answer your question, George?
Yes, it sure does. Thank you, Chief. W4RJ, NO70. And let me say 73, which means best wishes to all of the members of the class. This will be the last one I will be fortunate to be facilitated with, but we have some excellent faculty coming up on the remainder of the class. Hope that all of you will return and continue your studies for your technician class license. You're all to be commended for studying. Thank you, Chief. W4RJ, NO70.
All right. Well, I'm not going to be that easy to get rid of, George. I want to make sure everybody knows, and I'm pretty sure it's advertised, that if you have questions or you need help in any way, shape, or form, contact us and let us know. Email is a good way to do it, and I think our emails have been advertised, at least on the website. But I'll let Mike and others fill you in. But be glad to take emails and help out any way I can. Anyway, 73 to all. And I guess that's about it. I got to dodge some more raindrops here. It's been raining pretty much the whole week up here. So, Mike, I'll pass it back over to you. This is W4RFJ. Back to Net Control. Adios, amigos.
Thank you, W4RFJ. This is KD0CDQ. Yes, if you have any questions at any time, we do have an email address for the outreach program. If you want to copy it down, it might be a good idea. It's VOIP@SCARS, S-C-A-R-S, Boyd, V-O-I-P, VOIP, V-O-I-P. So it's SCARSVOIP.com. Because you may be listening to this at a later date and have a question on something, it'll always be available. It's VOIP@SCARSVOIP.com. I hope that you'll note that so you can always get in touch with us. Letting it drop. On that last question, as in many of the questions, a simple thing like a fuse, what a wonderful little gem that is. It can save your circuits, keeps things from melting down. A few weeks ago, I was working an event, and it was dark, and I had my flashers going on my car. All of the amber flashers were going, and all of a sudden, my amber flashers went out. I was out there for over an hour, and the flasher was going and overheated the automobile circuit. So the little fuse, the little, what is it, just pennies, it blew. So all I had to do was put another 5-amp fuse in, and the thing was happy again. But without that fuse, I may have done some damage either to the wiring, to the flashing lights, or who knows what else it could have been damaged. So a little thing like a fuse. And yes, those old fuses that you screwed in, I had those in my previous home. Yes, those were nice. You call them a button. I knew exactly what you meant when you called them a button. Fuses are valuable little tools. Try to keep some spare ones handy, because without them, you're going to stick a penny in there or something like they used to do in the old days in the button type, and that was not the way to go. Okay, letting it drop. Thank you, gentlemen. George and Chief, you did an excellent job this past Sunday and again today. Very good. Good explanations, very clearly done. And we're looking forward to another pair of instructors. So I'm going to give you now as a heads up for next Sunday and Tuesday. We're going to have KC2GA Gary from Syracuse, New York. And we're going to have N1SEZ Paul from Danbury, Connecticut. They will be the two instructors, but what's important is what questions they will be covering, on which is August 26th, Sunday. They'll be handling the questions from Tango 6 Bravo through Tango 7 Bravo, letting it drop. And again, on Tuesday, August 28th, they'll be handling Tango 7 Charlie through Tango 8 Charlie. So that's your next question pool that we'll be working on. Look them over. Look those questions over. And if you have any questions about a question that we don't cover, we're not going to cover all the hundreds of questions that are given. If you have any questions, you can always get in touch with South Cars at VOIP. That's South Cars, S-C-A-R-S, V-O-I-P, .com. I can't say that enough, because I know sometimes you just feel blank about a question. We will be there. Someone will be there to answer those emails. Okay, are there any other comments? If you have any comments, George or Chief, go right ahead. Go right ahead with your comments. This is KD0CDQ standing by.
NO70, just a closing comment.
Go right ahead, NO70.
Thank you, Michael. You know, we've dealt into some pretty hard stuff tonight with calculations, inductance, impedance, capacitance, Ohm's law. But it does seem to me that these things do have everyday application. They certainly, for those the younger people that might be taking this by podcast or people looking at career changes, this is the kind of stuff that is found in job interviews, admission tests. It also is certainly useful when trying to set up and run your own, if you get your technician class license, you'll be dealing with power output. If you need to know how to calculate the power output and make sure that you're staying within the legal limits, because it can cost some money in fines from the FCC if one does a miscalculation and make a misadjustment. There's responsibility that one can be very proud of and confident in one's abilities through life. So it's more than calculations that we've covered tonight. It's a new confidence and awareness and assuredness that you have for your ability to take on a new phase of your life. And there's a lot of value to that. Students who are learning are the greatest resource ever. And it's the students tonight that make the class, not the instructors. And that the students that make the class is dependent upon what they make of the class for themselves. Okay, that's this old retired teacher's comments. Thank you for letting me get on my soapbox, everyone. Again, my very best wishes. 7-3 means best wishes and to everyone, and you'll learn more as you go along. Thank you for the being able to comment. KD0CDQ, NO70, over.
Comment. Thank you very much, George. I appreciate everything that you said there. And another good thing about becoming a licensed ham is fellowship. Please, when you're looking at becoming a ham, look for a local club in an area. Look for a club. Join a club. Meet some other guys and girls. They will help you with the questions that you didn't even know you had. And you really can become very efficient in ham radio by asking questions and being around other people that may have more experience than you have. So look for a club. Join up. Go have a cup of coffee. Have a hamburger, whatever it takes, a pizza. But go to these club meetings. Just, you don't have to always join, but it's a good idea to do so. So find some fellowship, find some people that can help you and help you along in the long, long time that you will have your license. So enjoy fellowship. That's all I can say. That's the best, one of the probably the best thing about ham radio to me is the fellowship, the people, the things you do together, the problems and fixing those problems. I'm going to let it drop. This is KD0CDQ. And I'm looking forward to next Sunday evening, August the 26th, and we'll have the next session of questions. I already gave what the question pool is. I've got 5 minutes before the top of the hour, and I've got another net that I've got to jump into and say hello. So take care, everyone. And if you have any questions, Chief, if you have anything else you want to say, or George, or Gordon, come aboard. Now's a good time. This is KD0CDQ saying good night.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to see if I've got it here.
You're making it in, Chief.
All right, well, I've got a couple of things I'd like to add. And, you know, I've been involved with electronics and radio and computers since I was, a long time ago. Let's just put it that way. I think I was washing dishes right alongside Noah when we were on the Ark. But anyway, long story short of it is, I still learn something new every day in this hobby. I meet a lot of great people, and I meet a lot of not-so-great people. But we all have one thing in common, and that's the enjoyment of amateur radio. One thing I want to say is, please, never, never put a nickel or anything other than the correct part to protect your expensive equipment, or should I say hard-built equipment. You know, a lot of us hams build our own stuff. Never. It is a major safety issue, and that's the only reason why I even bring it up. The other point is that we've all been where you are. When I got my license, I had an Elmer that back then, the Elmer General and above could give you your novice exam. And he made me work for it. However, we've all been there, and, you know, we're here to help you transverse into the world of amateur radio. And hope these classes have been of help. I'm sorry I'm getting a little long-winded. I think Michael said he was going to go, so I'm going to pass it over to KY6B. If you're there, if not, George, pick it up. W4RFJ 73 all around.
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, George. Nice session here this evening. You had me smiling a couple of times, George. You had me smile when you say, "Could you reset a fuse?" And you know, it took me back to the days. And this is probably before what I'm about to say won't be recognizable to a lot of the newer hams. But my first car was a 6-volt car. It had to have an amateur radio in it. It was a Mercury convertible. And I used a PE-103 dynamotor from World War II to power the transmitter in the car. And the starting torque, and you talk about your bicycles, George. The starting torque and the power drain, the current drain off the battery to get that thing kicking and rolling and rotating was something. I think it was something like about 30 to 40 amps, something like that, at 6 volts. So I had cartridge fuses protecting that dynamotor. And those cartridge fuses had caps on them that you could unscrew. And if you blew a fuse, you could put another slug of the proper amperage back into that fuse, and off you'd go. So that was a resettable fuse. Then on the other hand, if your PE-103 dynamotor drew more current than the fuse would handle, you could take the cap off of that thing and put two fuses in parallel. But you had to watch what you were doing. At any rate, thanks, guys. N070KY6V, go ahead.
I guess part of the fun, too, is that sometime if you do build your own equipment or put your own transmitter online, that be really careful. It's probably going to happen sometime in your lifetime that you'll get a mild little shock because you forgot safety stuff, or you get a little bit of an RF burn or something. But that's not necessarily the case. Let's hope that safety prevails especially with today's added safeguards that have been put on equipment. And the hobby is so enjoyable, as well as the mystery of talking to these people around the world. You're sitting in your living room, and you hear somebody from the next state, the next country, across the ocean, and the excitement of making those new friends from other cultures and other places. There's a mystery and an aura of anticipation and expectation. So getting the technician class license is worth all of the effort and sometimes pain. Thank you, Gordon. Back to you for closing. And hey, Chief, thanks for being there. It was a pleasure to be on the podium roster with you tonight. KY6V, NL70, over.
Okay, well, I think then that was really officially closed by Mike, but I'll go ahead and just make a couple of comments. Guys and gals, we are at the 50% mark with the completion of this class tonight, which is the fourth class in a series of eight. So you're halfway there. And please take the tips seriously that you've been given. The question pool has been segmented per class and put on the website for you guys to, and gals to take a look at before the class, so that we can parlay any questions that you might have either by email or here on the class itself, and keep things rolling in a positive manner. Good night, everybody. I'm going to go find some dinner. Class number four is now closed officially. Servers back to normal use and abuse. And this is KY6V. Bye-bye for now.